So good afternoon, everyone. Did you have a good afternoon? It's nice chit-chat with your country groups. Very good. So welcome to our next session. And we have with us a personal friend, but also a wonderful teacher, Jill Soares from New Zealand. Has anyone been to New Zealand? Oh, okay, so a few people know where New Zealand is. Okay, wonderful. So Jill started her journey with meditation in 1987. And Jill comes from a very small city called Christchurch, beautiful city. And she took this meditation course there and then subsequently moved to London, where she spent 10 years. And she worked at the heart of our international center in London called Global Cooperation House. So she was, you know, one of the volunteers there for 10 years, after which she moved to Istanbul, and she lived in our center in Istanbul for 14 years. So she's very, you know, comfortable being with people from Muslim, Arabic background, Middle Eastern culture, all of that. Isn't that, Jill?
Actually, I also forgot to mention on that little list that I've worked in for my job in Bahrain, Qatar, and Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, everywhere except Saudi.
Yeah, so Jill has a deep connection with work and with meditation with all of us. And for the last 10 years, she's been traveling in different parts of the world and also spent some time back in New Zealand. And now she's settled actually just down the road for the last few months, planning to make this her base and then travel for work everywhere, because this is so central in the world. So Jill actually works as a soft skills trainer in businesses, and she's here to tell us more about our own inner peace and being here and now. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you. Thank you for choosing this wonderful topic. And it's one of those topics that, actually, I thought I was going to do another topic initially, which is interesting because in that topic I've done so many times. I don't even need to be in the here and now. I just can reel it out. When she said, be here in the now and find that peace in the here and now, I thought actually it would be interesting not to actually plan this workshop. Because generally it's that little fear of the in the mind saying, oh, I better know where I'm going with this, to have that security. And so instead I thought, okay, let me spend the last few days, I've been more conscious of it, as much as possible in the here and now in peace. And I'm guessing that's what we're all doing here and now. But how easy do you find it to be really in that beyond time, in that absolutely deep inner peace? Does it come quickly, or do you find that your mind wanders and all sorts of thoughts going on, and then you touch it and then you go off again? How do you find it easy? Anyone find it very easy to be in the here and now? Okay. So this is, I think, one of the most beautiful experiences that a human being can have, actually, to be in this moment and all that that means. You know, we hear it like a cliche, don't we, all be here in the now, and you think that it means focus on the faucet dripping. You know, but these are sometimes just little methods that people kind of point, and that's what the BK knowledge is always pointing us towards. And I think the more you actually experience it and all that there is in the here and now, that's why I think the BKs are so enthusiastic to run events year after year after year, because they feel like there's no more beautiful gift that you can give someone, is that to point as clearly as possible into that direction of the self. And then each one starts their journey, and we all inspire each other. And of course, the more we're all able to do it, to find what is opposing that moment and work on ourselves, I think it helps each other I think that's why a lot of us, there's a collective energy, you know, when we all try to just really sincerely touch that inner silence and just let go of all the chatter. you know how unimportant it is on one level, yeah, but we still struggle with this noise. An analogy that keep, analogies have been coming to my mind all the last few days thinking about this topic. And in a way, I think it's the perfect analogy in a way is being ready to be in public like this. You know, like it's a moment that's going to come. You know, I know about it a few days ahead. And then there's, you know, at some point this moment was going to come now. But how did it occupy my consciousness until this moment? This is really how we need to prepare for every moment, because we can't rehearse for everything that's going to happen in our lives, can we? Like, you just do not know what's going to happen. And we see this, I think this is making us all much more ready for spirituality, because we're just seeing how easily the things that we thought could make us feel at least a bit secure and a bit, things are predictable and you can create your long-term vision and get happy about something you're going to do. And yet everything's pointing us back in the, just enjoy this moment, because you don't really know what else is going to be there. And if you learn to enjoy everything that this moment is holding, the good and the bad, and even go beyond those labels and just be with yourself, like the ability to do that, it's the skill for the time that's coming, if not now, isn't it? You know, things get unpredictable, that's what we want to be able to do. And so it can help to have a few little maps. So I mentioned analogies. So all week analogies are coming. And I could try to put them in order and structure this to take you somewhere. Or we can improvise. And we can trust that in this moment, all those beautiful analogies for the spiritual journey, yeah, are all inside of me. And with our collective intention together, yeah, we're going to really learn how to do this. Like, take a big leap. So that every meditation that you have from now on, imagine that that was like a deeply moving experience. Instead of like, okay, the music's finished, better check my phone. Yay, dinner's coming. You know, or whatever is occupying our minds and coming and going. So we want to go deeper. So if we look to this as the movement of time, you know, because we're talking about being here in the now, which is a point. You know, the BKs are obsessed with this point, if you haven't noticed, yeah? And it's for a very important reason. It's a very deep, deep symbol, really. So in the point of time, we're moving along this line, but could be a circle, it doesn't really matter, but we're moving along in time. And time is very related to the mind, isn't it? Like, you know, you have to plan because you're living in time. Your friends wouldn't be happy if you just turned up 2 hours late and said, but I'm living in the here and now. Sorry, I missed you. You know, like, we plan for things. Before I came here, I thought I better take a pen just in case. So it's not that by living in the here and now, we're not functioning, we're just floating in the soul dimension. But it's really about being much more aware in the moment of what you're aware of and choosing to shift it into an awareness that brings out the best in your feeling world, but also the best in your being you. Isn't that what you want to be? Yeah? You want to be the guru of your own life. You've got to, you know, find that. So in the journey of the day, we have to come, the mind has to go into the thought world. And some of that's just, yes, I wonder if I should pack a shawl, it might be cold at the Giants Rover. You know, like, there's a certain amount of mundane day-to-day thoughts that we have. And then, of course, we have a commentary on what's going on around us. You know, but there's also spikes in this. And these are kind of when your emotions are triggered. You could say when your mind is disturbed. And actually, I think this is the one thing that we have to learn to be more and more sensitive, is that how we're actually feeling. Because that's really the simplest indication of whether you're coming from your real self or your false self. So that we use different words for these different selves, and we'll do a map of that, because we really want to see where we're coming from in the here and now. And if the here and now is full of stress, it's because your awareness in this moment is in some deluded world of your thoughts. Because if you were with yourself in the here and now, there'd be joy, there'd be intuition, you know, like athletes in the flow. I think that's how we really are when we're here in the now. We're not just like, I'm a soul, a point of light. It's a bit robotic when you start learning meditation. You know, you go through the steps, imagining a point of light. It's a little bit clumsy, you know, but at some point you really feel yourself as an energy moving through the world and greeting other spiritual energies on their journey and experiencing a beautiful flow of love. And it's interesting that you have inner peace, yeah, and inner power. And then if you go upstairs to the big hall, there's a big poster saying unlimited, actually it's not, yeah, unlimited love. So unlimited peace, unlimited power, unlimited love. I think those are the three things that we find if we're in the here and now. So the here and now, so we're moving along on our thought, in our thought world, kind of up and down. And when we try to focus in the here and now, I think one of the reasons why we might resist it so much is it's like a mini death. You know, like you're moving along, like there's these waves of thought entertaining, some of them disturbing, some of them hopeful, you know. But whatever it is full of, it's a wave. And somehow we're so used to like living on that wave. And not only that, is there's, especially with these very emotional thoughts, like when there's a reaction to things that are going on, and there's a sharp, you know, negative energy. These also create certain hormones in our body, like cortisol and adrenaline, and then your body, without realizing, is like physically running from the moment, yeah? And then suddenly you come to meditation, they say, put the brake on. And, you know, it's like you're going cold turkey on your thought addiction. And, you know, and then people feel like, oh, it's kind of empty, it's boring. And that's only because you've been eating junk, kind of junk food, and then someone's told you to eat something healthy, but not tasty. It's like in the beginning, meditation can feel a little bit tasteless. You know, you'd rather watch a movie because it's much more alive. And in meditation, it's like your thoughts, it's like you're trying to learn to use a muscle that just doesn't seem to, you know, want to focus. But actually what we're really trying to do is discover that this point is just a doorway to this layers of our inner world. I mean, I don't have a formula for how many layers or anything, but in a sense, there's more subtle, beautiful experiences and wonders to be felt inside of what we call the soul, that eventually this becomes so real and so more fascinating that all these mundane thoughts, you want to do them as less as possible. You know, you want to simplify your life so that you can actually spend more time being. And when you see emotional drama, not even around you, but you know, around you, but even in your own emotions, you know, so it's not that you're going to become like instantly beyond everything. But every time you do find something that triggers one of these spikes, you just become curious. You know, what is that? Rather than getting more involved in it. It's like you're watching it from the depths. You know, like you're at the depth of a a beautiful clear pool and you're looking up and you can even see your own mind stuck in its very predictable habits. You know, sometimes thoughts come to my mind, like today I heard myself thinking, she deserved that. And then I thought, oh, what a nasty thought, you know. But then I just kind of laughed at this, you know, this programmed mind. It's not just my programming, it's thousands of years of culture that's taught us to be judging and insecure and, you know, all of that. So we want to learn how to dive quick and deep into this area, and so that this feels more natural. You know, it's like eating salads becomes, if you eat them enough, you feel like, oh, that's the real nourishment. I don't want to eat that junk. But if you've been eating junk for too long, again, you feel like, oh, that meditation, it's like bland. You know, I'd rather live on the outside. Not in the here and now, but in the then and will be and was. So I just want to draw this from a different angle. And of course, you know, this is not a road map, but it's, yeah, something I find helpful. So actually, this particular way of drawing it, I saw it in a video. I have to give the credit. It was in The Art of Being Yourself. It was a TED talk. But she drew the kind of soul diagram that very much, you know, this is what I've learned from here. But I've never seen it exactly with the way she'd done it. So she started with the outside you. I better draw the rings first. One, and then that. Okay. So she said this outside first layer, this is the perception others have of you. And one thing that my mother always said was great about getting older is that you don't care so much what people think about you and you become a lot more free. And I think that's true. And I also see it in the BK culture, you know, like, because it's, we have many of our seniors like living to be 90, 100, and they become more and more themselves. And so, you know, as a teenager, you know, as we make spiritual awakening, this should become less and less important. And usually when it becomes less important and your focus is closer to home, people's perceptions will naturally change anyway. Yeah, so this is really an area where we can save all of our thoughts related to this. You know, and no, you don't know what anybody really thinks, and who cares? Like, if you start now, as whatever age you are, you're going to enjoy the rest of your life a lot, lot more. Now, this next layer, she called it, she called it your wishbone, like the person you wish to be. But in a way, I feel that wish is coming from a deep inner, like each one of us is a seed, yeah? Like we know that soul is like a little seed. And you're planted into this body, this soil, and and there's a role associated with that, you know? You're given some roles, you choose some roles, and but in your life, you really, I think like the seed knows it's going to be an oak. It knows what kind of tree it is, yeah? And I think deep inside of each of us, you kind of know what your best self would look like and feel like and act like. Yeah? That, know what I mean? You'll have an ideal self, we could say. Then we have what we call the ego. In the Brahma Kumaris, you might hear this phrase, body consciousness. But it's really all the limited consciousness that's linked to this body and this role and all the preferences and beliefs, and there's a whole world of that in there we're going to look at. But that the ego is really the main thing that blocks the deepest part of us. I mean, this is all happening in the soul, but we could say that this is the soul core, soul essence. And, you know, when we see that point of light, that's what we're aware of, that it is the source of inner peace, love, power, purity. And just saying those words almost feels like cheapening them, yeah? And I remember listening to, in fact, one of the things that I've been quite impressed with recently is a lot of people who have left their bodies in accidents. I don't know if you've ever listened, had a good listen to some N, what do they call them, NDE?
Yeah.
Because basically what happens when someone has a near-death experience, they're trundling along on that line and they have an instant here and now moment and they go deep down, or and they feel like they go up, but they, you know, they go deep down into the soul in an instant, and that whole, all those different layers kind of open up. But the first thing they always say is, oh my God, there's so much peace. And then the second thing they say is, wow, I'm still me. You know, they're always surprised that actually they're still me. I'm still laughing at myself thinking those thoughts. I'm still, there's some sort of journey of continuity. But one particular pilot described once, he was in an accident, and he saw the point of light. You know, often people, not everyone has different ones, but quite common is, of course, leaving the body and going, wow, you know, that doesn't even interest me anymore. And that feeling like, oh, I came home to myself. And just so much peace and like silence, you know, and timelessness. They instantly feel that. It changes their lives. But some of them also see this point of light that gets bigger and bigger, and they, you know, feel it's God. Other people, of course, talk to Jesus and Moses and all the rest of it. But that point of light theme, you see it again and again. And this pilot described it. He said, if you put all the love of all the mothers together for the whole of history, he said, it wouldn't even be one little percentage of the love that they felt from God. Like, that's why I say words cannot convey that depth of feeling. And they always come back and feel like, oh, we try to put it into words. And they feel like when they come back, they also felt the unlimitedness of themselves, and that we have to like squeeze our consciousness into time and space and bodies and role, you know, and they say it's very, very dense. And they all sort of say, congratulations for having a go. Like, it's, you know, even if you don't think you're doing well compared with that world, they say this is quite a challenge, you know. But they also say that you can experience, and this is what I believe, because this is what I've learned really from the Brahma Kumaris, like everything you hear these people saying when they leave the body and reach, you know, see who they are, experience that inner peace, feel the connection with God, feel that everything happens for a reason, feel that nothing, there's nothing to worry about. That's the essence of what they come back with. And this is the essence of what we learn in meditation. So literally every time you meditate, you're having a little near-death experience, but actually you're having a comeback to life experience. Because life on these surface levels is really just busyness. And yet there's this vast world of beautiful feelings. But you have to be a little bit patient, because sometimes to get through that point into the depth, there is a certain amount of resistance. And it's like you just got to, you know, sit with it. And soon it surprises you and you go, wow, you know. So even if you come out of a meditation and you feel like, wow, I really felt like stillness for a few seconds, and I felt that there was no time, or I felt how loving I am. Like, that's a good meditation. You know, like every time you touch that soul essence, it gets easier and more natural, and all the knowledge, whatever the classes that you were taking, in a sense, they're just ways, different ways of looking at how to go inwards and find that inner world. And then use it to bring out that ideal self. So let's just talk a little bit about this ego self that's blocking the way. Otherwise, you know, we'd be like always able to meditate, feel that here and now, that beauty inside would feel wonderful. And then, you know, that ego wouldn't even be in the picture. We'd just be expressing all of that wisdom, joy, beauty with the world. We'd be our own ideal self. And in every moment, we would feel these beautiful qualities. So this represents kind of, yeah, our true self as a human being. And then there's the soul, little seed of light, energy, me, comes into this, you know, into this form to play this role as well as I can. And then what happens? We start identifying. This is where the ego grows from childhood. So I'll give you another analogy which is helpful for me for this. So from childhood, because essentially, you know, a child is the most free from ego. Yeah, they're not, the child isn't like, do I look good in these nappies? You know, they're very in the moment here and now. So we start brick by brick building up this sand castle. Sand, because it's built of things that are just not sustainable. Or just generally false, you know. So this can be everything from the early programming that you got unconsciously, that I'm no good, because that's how your parents spoke to you. So it could be I'm no good, this is all I deserve. It could be beliefs. But it can also be identifying with things that happened to you, your life stories or your skills, the family you came from. You know, so we talk about this a lot in BKs, you know, like leave aside the labels. But the thing is, those labels are not just, you know, body and race, and like there's a whole network of those. There's not, you know, these bricks are like tiny, built up over your whole life. And every time you're feeling that disturbance where you're not in the here and now in yourself, it's because you're living here and you're always ready to defend it. That's why people never relax. Because this self that we've built up, this kind of false self that we all have, and really, this is, I guess, if you're going to do any work on the spiritual journey, because work shouldn't be a word that we associate with spirituality. If it is in your feeling, it means you're going the wrong way, because you won't be able to keep it up. But it's a game. It's a game to get rid of as many of these bricks of the sandcastle, you know, to make this smaller and smaller, so that the light of the soul shines through your ideal self. Now, this doesn't mean getting rid of your nice car. This means getting rid of the identification with your nice car. And just, how do you do that? You just watch yourself, you know, because that's all you can do. Watch your, the self, the ego self, and its thoughts praising you for having the best car in the neighborhood, and or whatever your particular story around that car is, or your worries about paying for that car. You know, any thought related to that area of your life that causes you a bad feeling, it's because you're not seeing it from the highest perspective, yeah? From the highest perspective, you know, this is all just noise, noise of thoughts. Me and my and who and hey and what I did and what you did and what, you know, all of that, just, you know, that's what we want to do, is just let it go. And you let it go when you notice that it's disturbing you, and just look at it, you know, like, actually I had an experience in this hall, and it was maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago, and I was sitting on that seat and I was getting ready to sing a song. And I noticed that I was getting nervous. You know, the heartbeat is increasing, that wave is happening. And so then I asked myself this question, you know, what does Jillian want? And so when I'm saying Jillian, I mean this character that I've been playing long enough that I think it's me. You know, Jillian did this. And what I wanted was the song for Jillian to go good so that Jillian gets a few extra bricks for her castle. Because this will make me feel more successful and more, you know, pop, whatever. You know, it's so unconscious, such a habit that... But that fear is an indication that my consciousness is operating from the self. It's not, we shouldn't give it the self. This little puppet character that I'm playing that's kind of developed a little bit of a mind of its own that tries to scare me into thinking that there's something to be afraid of, because it gives it a bit of excitement, you know? So when just notice it, and in noticing it, I said, okay, well, what does the soul want? And what do you think would come to mind? So you're about to sing, yeah, and you feel the nervousness come, and you recognize that, okay, you want it to go good, and you're worried that your voice will crack, and unconsciously you're getting excited, and maybe it's going to go, you know, all those moments in our lives. But just slip into the here and now and imagine it's you in some important moment about to come. What does the soul need? From that moment, what does the soul need? on some level, that's all true. All of those to give love, but the thought that came into my mind was nothing. I don't need anything. You know, that was such a freeing thought that I suddenly noticed that all that anxiety just like went. I was like, oh, like I'm completely free in this moment. Like I actually don't need it to go well or even happen or, you know, anything. Because I'm absolutely full. And this is just, and this is what we do in spirituality, is we play with perspectives. And we see, does that thought feel like it's coming from inside? And when we stop for those moments, we go inside more. And that just gives you more time to check in. Am I having a little emotional drama going on? Am I defending my... Even around the table, you know, you present an idea which you think is great and everybody looks at you like you're an idiot and you start to feel a little bit upset. Your best friend and whatever. You know, whatever stories and bricks. That's all you have to do. Just notice that there's some disturbance going on. And maybe you can find, if you're, you know, look closely, you can see that what it's related to. You know, you might have a lot of bricks about your looks. You might have a lot of bricks about being a perfect meditation student or teacher or whatever. Each of our sand castles of egos is really unique, yeah? And it's so clever. It will even try to feed off this. That's how you can also get trapped in spirituality, trying from the ego to act like your ideal self. You know, like try to be a good spiritual person. And this is where you get these like people who are so-called spiritual but having like a lot of issues, because it's like you're kind of suppressing yourself. You know, you're trying to like be good, but it's out of the ego instead of touching the soul and letting the soul do the work, letting God help you do the work. You know, so it should never feel like hard effort. It should feel like I'm curious to see, you know, see what my ego's made of. And each time I find something that is disturbing me in the here and now, it could even be, it's too cold. That person took my seat. You know, my mum, whatever story, you know, every day there's thousands of those little moments to catch yourself. I don't feel good. I'm not able to feel my inner being. What's the thought? And go, oh, that's trying to trick me into being afraid of what people think of me. It's trying to make me nervous when I actually need nothing. Hey, I'm free again. You know, and this is how the day goes, and it becomes in a way, such a journey that for all BKs, you know, when we see this point of light, actually it's interesting because in Hindi it's the word bindu, but the word for ocean is sindu. You know, so within that point, there's actually a world to be discovered, an ocean of depth and beauty and subtlety. And I just encourage you all to take as many moments, you know, not just wait for the formal meditation, now we're going to do it, but, you know, stopping that rushing momentum. You know, when you're like doing something in a hurry or not really concentrating on the conversation or just, you know, feeling stressed, just keep pulling yourself back into that. Oh, it's always there. It's like, final analogy, eye of the storm. You know, when you're basically getting upset, and this is all the voices of your ego, that you need something that you're not getting. So you're upset, and it's like a storm going around in your mind, yeah? It's happening outside, but because you're identifying with it, the problem, the situation, that means it's come inside. It's like in the room of your mind. I love this analogy. In fact, maybe I'll finish with that meditation, like a 10-minute visualization that really helps to kind of capture what we've been talking about. Does that sound? Yeah? Oh, it's 6:40. Oh, great. Okay. See, I'm so here in the moment that I completely lost track of the time. Okay, so I can milk this analogy of the storm a bit more. Okay, so just actually this we looked at it as layers, but this could also be like a record player. And so imagine that this is the layers of your soul. And each one is like a thumbprint, it's like unique, yeah? And you come with your original song already on the record. You know, there's the, each one has their unique song, unique tune, unique note to give the world. And that's already pre-installed on the record, yeah? In the middle. And then, over time, the layers of the ego, and in a way, more recording gets made, you know, grooves and habits. And then the song becomes song of misery, song of I'm a victim, song of never enough. And we find that's what our mind plays. It goes in these grooves, and everyone has particular stories and things and particular emotions. Some people are more likely to get angry. You know, their stories are, why are people not doing what I want them to do and nothing's ever good enough? You know, and then others are like, poor me, nobody ever notices me. And then, you know, and this goes on for a lifetime. It's a huge record. But the beautiful thing is that at any moment, anybody old enough to have a record player? I know they've made a comeback. Yeah? How many have never had a record player? Maybe I should ask that. Who's has never used a record player? Not most people. We could update it for an iPod analogy would work as well, but you used to be able to lift up the needle and then place it down on the song that you wanted, yeah? It doesn't take time. You don't have to rewind it or fast forward it like the cassette. And so really, that's all we're doing. You know, because meditation, again, is not just something you do in the morning or after the afternoon. It's a kind of a word that we try to communicate to others a little bit what we're doing here. But actually, a spiritual journey is your whole day. You know, it's how you're feeling in every moment. It's are you looking at people with judgment or from the heart? You know, it's and I think you all know this, you know, and we all do it in different ways. But at any moment, you can literally, as soon as you notice you're stuck on that poor me song or I have to do too much, I'm really stressed, I'm going to be late, you know, whatever thought or emotion is disturbing you, if you practice just lifting it up and putting it down as near to the center as you can. You'll know when you're getting close because your thoughts will start to calm down, you know, and then you'll start to come up with all these knowledgeable points in your mind that are more like rational, you know. I'll give you one example. When I was living in Istanbul, there was an evening where the neighbor came home and he was drunk, angry, shouting, and he was kicking his dog. He was walking, I know, exactly. And I don't suppose, are there some more water there? Yeah, so he was coming through to the backyard, but my Turkish was like not good enough that I really wanted to like tell him off. You know, I thought it was just going to make the whole situation, you know, worse. So I just sat there judging him instead. And I really felt like my mind was disturbed. You know, like, oh, what a horrible thing. hurting an animal and la, 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 la. And then, but see, this is the thing. When the soul doesn't want to stay in that bad feeling, is it? You know, and usually what happens when we feel bad because we're having these thoughts that are coming from this ego, so we're all going to feel bad because these thoughts are still running in our minds, yeah? We're not instantly, we can be, but we keep having to be free in every moment. So, yeah, so this man goes inside and I'm still thinking about him like half an hour later. I can't sleep and I've got this storm basically going on in my mind. But, you know, I knew where I wanted to go. And I wanted to go to the inner part of the record. Or we could say like the eye of the storm. You know, my mind was in a storm. You know, when you're upset, there's like this racing, this feeling of disturbance going around. But I just knew, okay, where I want to go. Just, I want to be true. I want to be inside. I want to be at peace. And then what thought came to my mind was interesting. It was just an image of, there's a story in the Bible, you might have heard it, I know many of you might be from Islamic background, but it's quite a famous story, and it was the stoning of the prostitute. So basically the whole village were around, they were going to throw stones at the prostitute, and then Jesus came up and said, okay, the one who has no sin, never made a mistake, let him throw the first stone. And then they were all like, put their stones down. And that story just popped in my head. You know, and I think that's what can happen when you have that intention that I don't want to live in the noise of my ego. You know, the best thing that you can do for yourself and the world is learn how to get to that peace. You know, and just that thought, and then you get the help. I think you get the help too, you know, with that intention. Let me be here and now inside the soul and see with the eyes of the soul. But this thought, yeah, this image of this story came in my mind, and I kind of thought, okay, like, I don't kick people, like I wouldn't kick a dog, but do I kick people? In my mind, with my words, with my attitude, and you know, and I've been on a spiritual path for how many years, and I'm still kicking, I'm still getting drunk, if getting drunk is forgetting yourself and losing consciousness, you know, and so on a micro, macro level, each one of us has got exactly what we're looking at in other people, you know, they're just a mirror, and I think that was what that thought was telling me, and it instantly actually turned it from like a judgment of him into love. That poor man struggling, I know what that feels like, you know, and it transformed. And so that shows you when your feelings, you know, like from judgment to forgiveness to blessing others, with that beautiful good feelings and the feeling of humanity, and yes, I know the struggle, and you know, that's what's inside of the soul. You know, that's why it's worth to keep making this journey even if you sometimes feel like it's hard, you can't focus, it's worth it. I mean, I started meditating with the Brahma Kumaris when I was 17. And partly because I realized I needed it. I've always been this kind of hyperactive, a bit energy and curious about everything. And I could see that, oh, wow, like this is a world that I know I need to discover and I want to discover. And, you know, that's 1987. That's a long time ago. And yet I feel more and more that this is the most valuable thing I've ever learned. You know, this ability to just be with the soul in the here and now and see everything that's happening around. Almost like there's a lots of analogies for it, actually, to help you, because one of the reasons why we resist stepping away from the world of noise and doing and entertainment and go into that deep silence, yeah, that sort of death before it opens up moment. It's partly because we're so addicted to the drama of what's going on in our life, yeah, in our thoughts, in our world. So it can really help to have a way of looking at the world, and this is what I mean by analogies can be really useful. So one of the ones that I really like is a common in the B case, it's a drama, Albert Einstein says it, that all the world's a stage, but actually it's a very profound metaphor, and a lot of what these people say when they leave their bodies temporarily and come back is they say that they often met up with people from their past. And they recognize that, oh, we actually agreed to do that, that I was going to test you as your terrible mother because it was going to make you, learn this or settle this or whatever it was. There was a deep meaning to those. And that beyond the veil, there is no, like, you and I. It's like one family drama. We're all going to come and you're going to play that part and I'm going to help you learn that lesson and it's all just happening perfectly. Like, they all come back with that feeling, that it literally is just like a drama. And, behind the costumes, we're all from the same family. We all look the same, we're all points of light, but we do have different, I don't know what the word we use for that dimension would be, personality. Sometimes we're reminded that God is a person. But I find that word quite hard to use when it comes to God because, it's even for a person, you're not just a person. You're an unlimited being. So now I've probably lost my place. What was I talking about, Yusuf?
The world is changed.
Oh, yeah, the world. Thank you. Yeah. And we all agree to act, there's no enemies. So even when it comes to the politicians, I've really worked on that. Because during COVID I was getting really annoyed with the controlling politicians and I really had to remind myself, they're also playing their parts. We don't know the secret to why they have to play that part or why that part is happening. It's not our, we're not the director of the play. We can play our part as well as we can. Another one is a puppet show. I love the idea of this is like a puppet show. Because with an actor, you can maybe still be vain about your appearance. You could be the Bollywood hunk or you could be, Quasimodo. But if we think of ourselves as puppets, and you're the funny bossy one and you're the one with the pot belly. And you kind of just, the more you can make fun of this person that you think you are, the easier it is to detach from it. I think it would be very hard for someone to insult me and to feel hurt by it because I've really worked hard on seeing my ridiculousness and being open to that, not instantly. when someone says something that really hurts one of your self-image and you just want to hurt them back or you want to cry or you never want to see that person again or whatever. It's it's a process, but it's all, you know, it's all opportunities. And so seeing yourself as a puppet character or a cartoon character, you know, and, you know, if you, for instance, if I made fun of Gillian, who wants the song to go well, she wants to be Celine Dion and everybody to praise her. Like, it's almost like you make fun of yourself. And who's making fun with love? It's the deeper part of you, you know? So these are all different ways that we can kind of, you know, go deeply into. You can take one of those analogies and use it for a week and think about it and try to see different actors and, you know, or practice in a moment trying to go from 100 miles an hour to stopping the brakes. You know, this is why we have these traffic control and why you have... Ezan, yeah. Yeah, five times a day, you know, it's like, put the brakes on and go inside, you know, it's the best advice. Okay, so I think I'd like to do a meditation, which is kind of a visualization, and I do this a lot in my... Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to have questions now or in 10 minutes? Okay, should we have 10 minutes questions and finish with meditation? Okay. Yeah, okay, please.
When you are about to go to the stage and you feel nervous inside,
yeah,
and you're worried about making a fool of yourself,
yeah,
it's actually something good, so you are more prepared.
Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so he's basically saying, isn't that nervousness before a speech good, so that makes you like, you know, I'm going to do a good job about it? Yeah. So this is the ego defending itself by saying, like, I have an obligation to do the best, so the ego is going to make sure that it all goes well. Believe me, I've been playing with these thoughts the last few days, because I could feel myself, like, preparing in my head with this fear. And then I really felt, no, this is a really good... challenge to, like, if this here and now soul consciousness is really true for me, and how many years I've thought about it and spoken about it, you know, if it's true, I should be able to trust spirit enough. And I don't mean just about giving a speech, but about anything. It could be a difficult conversation that you need to have with someone, it could be a habit, it could be on any level. But again, when I think we feel strain in our efforts, it's because our ego is trying to make the effort out of whatever subtle, you know, it's a subtle game. It's like a computer game with lots of levels, and it's always interesting because, you know, the more, I don't know if you play video games, but in video games they have like Easter eggs and things, or you do something and you get an energy and now you can go faster. So this is what it's like when you discover these limitations and thoughts and things that, you know, someone could be trapped in a whole lifetime, stuck on a role that I have to save this person, or, you know, we've all done things in our lives because of one deep thought belief, you know, and so it's, if you can free yourself from any of these, another level, the game's much more interesting and fun, you know, and there's a lot of help and there's a lot of, you know, I think, although a lot of us may have meditated for many years, I do feel that anyone who's coming now into this kind of discovery and journey of inner adventure, they have a big advantage of the collective vibration of the world and the need of it, and also the fact that the world itself is kind of helping us to realize how limited and how kind of unexpected the drama will be, you know, and the more that we feel who we are as an unlimited eternal traveler, the less any particular scene in the world, whether it's really good or really bad, we're not going to be up and down as much. I think that's the sign of a wise person, isn't it? Like, you never imagine Muhammad or Buddha going, oh my God, imagine, you know, like, low drama, no drama, you know. It's nothing to worry about. All good. That's what they always come back and say. So that's, you know, we come back from our meditation and we say, all good. So any other...
Yes? How do challenging them.
Yeah, out of fun, because it's fun to do things, you know. Okay, sorry.
If there's something challenging,
yeah,
I have to do it for work, for example. I don't want to meet those people, but I have to for work.
Yeah.
And I ask my soul, does my soul want to meet them? No, my soul doesn't want to meet them. My soul wants to sit at home and eat chocolate. So I don't meet them. My soul doesn't care. And I miss one meeting. I miss two meetings. I miss three meetings. I lose my job. And my soul doesn't care. My soul is happy. So is it the way forward then?
Well, I think if this, like, if you look at the BKs, I think,
yeah,
like, they're pretty active.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like, like, I don't think peace just makes you, like, want to, you know, become a zombie. I think it actually makes you, like, energized. Because you're feeling good, and what do you do when you're feeling good? Is you want to, like, you know, do things, be creative, share things, you know, because actually, what happens when you... If you really remove the ego and start to feel your soul coming through more, you're actually going to get a lot of other energy helping you move. Like, it's not that I have to motivate myself, but it was like spirit's going to move you and things are going to become interesting. Because part of also understanding yourself as a soul and an energy is, in a way, how... You know, the law of attraction and all that universe stuff that people got into. But in a way, yes, when your vibration is higher, you know, you attract things, into your life. But I think with the BKs, what I really like about their sort of pure approach to this, and it's funny because I used to play that film, The Secret, a lot to my students in Dubai. And always there'd be one person that would say, "Where's God? Where's God in that picture?" And I think that was such an interesting question, because a lot of people were like talking to the universe and their angels, and I demand, like, a restaurant, that this thing should happen for me. And, you know, it actually kind of works. But I think the more pure approach is to... not assume what is the best for you, but have a constant, like, dialogue with spirit about, you know, may the best thing happen. And actually, what I've been doing the last week, you know, I like to try different things out, but for the last week I tried an experiment, and in the morning I would write half a page as if it was the end of the day and how that day went. And so I would say things like, and it would be based kind of vaguely on what I knew was going to happen. So I'm not like wishing that a lottery ticket falls in front of me on the, I'm saying, you know, I hope that in that class today that I find the right words at the right time and I really convey what I want to the class. And actually that was really part of the preparation for this class. You know, that I sort of said to myself, I'm not going to plan it. out of that fear, but I want to trust in the here and now and the flow of that moment. But I thought, you can also send intention forward. You know what you're going to be doing. Yeah, later in the day. So I say, you know, I was doing this in Istanbul last week. I was saying, I'm going to look at everybody on the street as souls. And of course, there's like 16 million people on the streets. It's like, there's another one. There's another one with a cigarette out of his mouth. And there's another one, you know. But, you know, these little things. And then at the end of the day, I'd come home and then I would write what actually happened. And I was really surprised how they begin to, like, match up. In some ways, it's like I've sent that wish ahead, that today I'm going to be super calm. I'm not going to let, you know, the last few days I've written, I am in the here and the now, in peace. You know, I thought I want to put that intention as preparation for this here and now. So yeah, it's not that we're like not planning or not thinking ahead, but we're trusting the spirit to do it. You know, sometimes I'd think of a great analogy and I'd be like, where's my notebook? I have to, then I'd be like, no, trust that analogy is there, and if it's needed at the here and now, it's going to come out. You know, so this is also one of the beautiful things about getting more into the soul, is this feeling of everything, no resistance. No, and then, and of course, if things are moving faster, you get motivated, isn't it? You know, it's coming from a different... Actually, the word enthusiasm, this is often I've heard people talk about, it means entheos, which is Greek for God. So it's not coming from your temporary, oh, I need to get fit and lose weight motivation. It's coming from the Spirit. And it's like a, like they say, you know, don't leave this life without your song being sang. You know, it's that song. It's that push of that seed that wants to become a tree in this life. And give whatever fruit that you are here to give. You know, you left your perfume on this earth. And that's, you know, that's what being soul conscious is all about. It's not just, I'm a point of light in the forehead. It's like the doorway to this incredible inner adventure. That's why the VKs keep knocking on your door and saying, come on our retreat. Okay, I know I'm talking a lot. Maybe if there's one question or not, then we, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. It's the main...
Can you repeat the question?
Sorry. Is fear coming from the ego or part of the ego? It's a sign that your consciousness is identified with the false self. Yeah, and therefore you have something to lose. And so that you might say fear, but you might just say anxiety, nervousness, worry, over-planning, because what's going to happen, you know, hoarding, like there's a million expressions of that fear. And that's what we're like, we're cleaning out with fun and joy so that we can, you know, in Turkey they have a beautiful, and again, I'm love analogies, the whirling dervishes, you must have seen pictures of them, yeah? Then in Turkey, they have these white robes and they spin around. In Egypt, they do it also.
The Sufi,
yeah. Dervish. And so one thing, they come out with a heavy black cloak, yeah? And then they put that cloak aside, and that's symbolic of letting the ego go. And then they're wearing these full head-to-toe white costume. The hat also, it's kind of like pointed with a flat top. I don't know the meaning. Maybe Aruna knows, she lived there. But this is a special tall hat. But when they start to turn, there's one hand facing upwards and the other one like that. Yeah. And so basically it's about I receiving from God and I'm just distributing it. And I think in Islam, isn't it? It says like your right hand shouldn't know what the left hand's doing. That should be, you know, yeah, I'm just instrument. I'm not even counting or looking, you know. And that's when that in theos, you know, I think that's where we're no longer motivated, but in spirit we're just living our full potential as a tree. So may we all become the beautiful trees that each one of us is here to become. And yes, and as you become you, everybody gets easier to become them, to become them. So we have about another 10 minutes, yeah? Okay. So just drink a little bit of water. So you can actually close your eyes for this one. It's a real visualization exercise. And it was from one of our teachers, Brian Bacon. And he used a lot this analogy of the storm, that, you know, where we go from the storm to the inner eye of the storm, where it's completely quiet inside. So that's really the aim of this visualization, is to feel that. So I want to start this visualization that each one is imagining they're walking in the desert. And a desert with big sand dunes, golden sand. And you climb up very high on one of these sand dunes and you look over into the distance, There's desert stretched in every direction. You're like completely in the middle. But you see this tall building up ahead, way down below in the distance. And it really does strike you that maybe this is a mirage. It looks so out of place here. But you're curious, and so you head down the sand dune, the other side. You keep walking and walking until you get to the entrance of this tall building. And the doors open automatically, and you step in to the beautifully air-conditioned entrance of this building. And there's no one around. It's completely empty. But you see the lift, and so you go over, get in the lift, and press the top button to go to the very top. And so it goes up, 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 up. And the doors open, and you step out into a large open plan room. In fact, it's the whole top floor of this tall building. And all the walls are made of glass. And so you walk around the edge of the room and you look out at the amazing view. Just sand dunes stretched out into infinity. And there's no furniture in the room, there's just one chair, just like the chair that you're on now, by the window. And so it's the perfect chance to just relax, let go of all the heat and stress of the desert and just enjoy the beautiful temperature, the quiet atmosphere, and this amazing view, just reaching out forever. And you completely lose track of time until you notice that the sky is becoming dark. But it's not yet evening. What's happened is huge dark storm clouds have come in and they're completely blocking out all the sun. And then rain begins to fall and hit the glass, and there's a strong wind that's going around and around outside the building. You can see lightning, thunder. I mean, you're up in the air in a room with glass windows in the middle of a big storm. But you can see that the glass is very strong and thick. There's no way that that storm can come into the room. And so from your comfortable seat, you're actually really enjoying watching this display of the weather. The noise and this lightning and the drama of it. Until at one point you just notice the rain has become soft and then stops. And you notice that the clouds are beginning to drift away. You can see a little bit of blue sky now and the sun shining. Until eventually the whole sky is back to blue and the sun is shining brightly. And now I want you to imagine that your own physical body is just like that tall building. And at the top of this building, you've got two windows. These are your eyes. And of course, at the moment, the curtains are closed. And then behind these windows, behind your eyes, there's a room. You can imagine that your mind is like a room. And all day you sit in that room and look out the windows. And sometimes the sky is clear, the sun is shining, everything's going smoothly, everything's great. And other times, big storm clouds are coming, the situations are heavy, problems in every direction. And that bad weather, it doesn't just stay where it should, outside of the windows. It's like it comes in through your eyes, and now there's a whole storm going on in the mind. It's like you can imagine there's that hurricane. It's got its own momentum and energy. Your thoughts are racing. You feel disturbed. You try to fix the problem. It's getting worse. And then you remember, there's that chair. There's that eye of the storm. There's that inner place which cannot be touched by anything. And it's like sitting on the seat of the soul. So just imagine, you know, that's the storm is still running around in the room of your mind. Like, picture that. But then picture that there's a throne, or like the seat that you're on. But imagine that that seat is just behind your eye. And the one that's sitting on that seat, the one that's ultimately in control, is the real you. So that's that being at the center, the traveler, the wise one, the being of light and beauty and all of that depth and wonder that we've focused on. That's the one who's on the throne. And then from this position of knowing exactly who I am, it's so obvious that there's nothing to fear outside. It's just like the rain clouds coming and going. The sun, day one day, rain the next day. This is life. It's all just molecules and particles and patterns. But who am I? Like an emperor or empress on the throne of the soul, afraid of nothing, needing nothing, but full of beautiful energy and gifts to share through your words, through your eyes, through your hands. And now the storm is just not even in the mind anymore. It's just gone. And you're looking out at the world from such a place of wisdom. And an eternal being just observing a little change in the weather. And now if we all open the curtains on our eyes, we all open our eyelids. And you know that film Avatar? You know, I see you. This is what the BKs are always doing, you know. So when they're looking at you, they're not just like visualizing a point of light, but they know that there's an incredible being like we feel inside us, and that's each one. You know, it's a beautiful way to greet each other. Namaste, Om Shanti.